To talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
It is. Good morning, everybody. It's great to be here. I'm Art Bell, and boy, do we have a lot to do tonight. We are going to be covering the Pegasus story from stem to stern tonight. Why are we doing that? Well, we have on our hands, as I told you from the beginning, either the greatest hoax of the century. It'd be the greatest, I don't know. There might be better ones, but this one was pretty good if it's a hoax. Or we've got the biggest story of the century, if not all of mankind's history. I don't know. And we're going to try and clear that up for you tonight. We may leave you with more questions and answers, but I can tell you a couple of things straight up. One, if you go to the link that was the Geo-Annoying Cities site, which had the information about the Pegasus signal on it, all you now get is an NSA seal. You know, kind of like the site has been sealed by the National Security Administration. Well, one April 1st, Keith played a good joke on the FBI and put a FBI seal where our site would normally be on April 1st. And, boy, I'll tell you, you think that we had just committed some great federal crime, which apparently we had. And they told us to immediately take that seal down. So if the NSA seal on the GeoCities site is itself a hoax, then you'd think whoever put it up is going to be in trouble. But nevertheless, there it is, where all the information was. Now there's just an NSA seal. So there is that, and then there is a remarkable, remarkable story from Australia. To see that, you go to my website, you scroll down to the guest area, find the name Richard C. Hoagland, and click on the Australian information. A number of very large dishes have found a signal at the place where it ought to be. But they somehow are denying that it's what we think it is. It is nevertheless there. I mean, it's a spike coming out of the noise like Jodie Foster's kaboomp, kaboomp, kaboomp. It's just a gigantic spike coming out of the noise. So, you know, we're going to try and clear some of this up for you tonight. And I'll read you a couple of items. By the way, it has been suggested, and I thought this was the best facts I got all day long today, that when John Glenn comes back from space, we all dress up in ape suits. Does NASA have that kind of sense of humor? Probably not. But you've got to admit, it would be funny. I mean, the guys who normally wear the white suits and all that, all they'd have to do is have an ape head. Maybe they could drop something in the tang that the astronauts are supposed to always be drinking. They would temporarily disable their vocal cords, and that would do the job. All right, we've got a couple things to do. I want to read you a couple things. And then Richard C. Hoagland and the chronology of the whole Pegasus thing, whatever it is, we're into that story tonight. That's disappointing. That is not what I expected, but it will do. Anyway, Richard C. Hoagland coming up in just a moment. Stay right where you are. I've got a fax here from Bryn Marie in San Francisco. Says, Art, I really do know why you went away. You went on a secret mission for the betterment of all humankind. Time travel is now possible, and as a test, you were sent back to try and prevent the conception of Steve Benson. Oh, well, better luck next time. All right. All right, here we go. Let me first read this. It comes from Science and Technology, the BBC News, British Broadcasting Corporation. Some greeted it as a breakthrough. Others were more suspicious, believing it to be a hoax. Now the strange case of the alien signal from a nearby star seems to be just that. Last week it was claimed that a British engineer working for a telecommunications company had picked up a strange signal from a nearby star system called EQ Pegasi. The data was posted on the internet, starting a flurry of debate. Not my site, by the way. Yes, we did link to it, though. Some astronomers went away to look at EQ Peg. Others were suspicious. And we have a quote here from the Extraterrestrial Intelligence League, SETI League. For the past 10 days, we've been chasing a ghost, says the executive director. The SETI League has a network of 900 members in 48 countries. Many of them operate small radio telescopes as part of their search for alien signals from space. But none of them have been able to find the claimed signal from EQ Peg. He goes on to say, real science has been jeopardized. It is no longer just a hoax. It is sabotage of a highly respected grassroots effort. It has set SETI back 100 years. Really? The Pegasus story has set SETI back 100 years? Wow. Were they even listening 100 years ago? I don't think so. Anyway. One more item, and then it's off to Richard C., and you know what the C stands for, Hoagland. You know how our press treats, I've got to read this again. You know how our press treats stories about E.T. or anything paranormal, right? They always treat it the same way, swamp gas, time compression, you name it. They're in denial. Well, here's a fact for you. When Orville and Wilbur Wright, a couple of bicycle repairmen, persisted in their efforts to fly machines that were heavier than air, they found themselves flying in the face of dogma. Their first successful flight at Kitty Hawk took place in December of 1903, but in January of 1906, the well-respected Scientific American published an editorial entitled, quote, "The Wright Aeroplane and its Fabled Performance," unquote, end quote. Said the editorial, quote, "If such sensational and tremendously important experiments are being conducted in a not very remote part of the country on a subject which almost everybody feels is of the most profound interest, is it possible to believe that the enterprising American reporter could as well known comes down the chimney when the door is locked in his face, even if he has to scale a skyscraper to do so, would not have ascertained all about them and published it long ago?" End quote. Science, in fact, was ignoring the Wright brothers, who had then been making public flights for more than 2 years. 2 years, folks. And the prestigious Scientific American hee-hawed at the whole thing and said, "There's no way this could be going on. No way. Not with our American press. Not in America. Come on. They'd have dug this up. It would have been front page headlines long ago. But in fact, it had been going on for 2 years. Just something to ponder. Now, a one-time consultant to Walter Cronkite and NASA, where he is now much revered, and a sort of a general science reporter for us, one who has won awards, has won a very prestigious award, as a matter of fact, the Engstrom. Here is Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
By the way, our noise is back. They found us.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. We may have to switch back to the other line.
Well,
we can be better on that one.
We can do that. Let me see how it sounds during our first segment here. At any rate, Richard, a lot of people were shocked to the very quick today when they went to the GeoCities site to see the latest. And all they found was a National Security Agency symbol, as if it had been seized by the website had been seized by the NSA.
You know, if it weren't for the fact that we've got an extraordinary solid hit out of Australia, at this point, I would be willing, I'm sure, along with most of the mainstream media, most of the mainstream radio astronomers, most of the amateur guys, the SETI League, people like Seth Shostak and all the others, to say, this was one humdinger of a hoax, let's get back to the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think tonight, Art, and everyone else who's listening, that's exactly what someone has intended us to believe. That in fact, we are not dealing with an either or, we're dealing with a both. That we have both a hoax and a real signal, a real story.
Now, that's too much synchronicity for even me, Richard. It's a big sky up there. I am unwilling to believe that somebody concocted a hoax. Then other people began
No.
And then other people pointed dishes and found a signal at the
exactly.
hoax.
Exactly.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
There is, in this model, all right, and I'm going to read you some data. Remember, we have people on the ground in London, unlike certain other news agencies who have been content to send emails and get emails back saying from Polador, oh, I never did any of this.
I know. And you heard me read the thing about the Wright brothers here.
Yeah. We actually have people, physical, real warm bodies in London, digging, doing what old-fashioned reporting used to be about, where you tramp the streets and call the phone directories and make the house calls and all that. And I'm going to read you some material from one of those people a little later.
Okay.
Which indicates that not only do we have a real phenomena here, a real anomalous signal out there somewhere tonight, beamed toward Earth, picked up by several independent folks, and finally by a major professional facility in Australia.
How convinced of this are you?
That there's a real signal?
Mm-hmm.
Very. The ATCA, the Australian Telescope Compact Array, is a miniature version of the VLA, the very large array which Jodie Foster used in the movie just mm-hmm. south of me here in New Mexico.
Right.
The VLA has 27 antennas set in a Y-shaped railway track configuration so they can be moved many, many miles apart to synthesize a big radio telescope.
Right.
The farther apart the edges of the dishes are, the finer the resolution and the better the resolving power.
Right.
The compact array is a kind of miniature, you know, it's kind of the Bill Gates version down in Australia of the very large array. And it's six antennas. They're 22 meters in size, parabolic dishes.
Yes.
And they can spread them out by, you know, maybe a couple, 3 miles. I don't know what the exact dimensions are. They focused all six antennas on the night of the 6th. I'm sorry, the day of the 2nd.
Right.
On Pegasus.
Yes.
And they picked up a signal. And the full story, linked now to our website and your website, is available.
Well, they've got the screen dump up there once
again. Screen dump of one of their processings, and they have several
and
screen dumps.
And good Lord, Richard, that's a gigantic city. I mean, that looks like Jodie Foster's kaboom, kaboom, kaboom.
Absolutely. It's huge.
Yeah.
And they didn't see it as a signal. The astonishing thing in our update tonight, you know, because Enterprise has been posting during the week updates on this story. Well, tonight's update is called Down Under Radio Astronomers Are Upside Down. Prove they're just horsing around. Because they've got an enormous, whopping, contact Jodie Foster-type signal, and they claim it's interference, and the signal is four times the noise. Four times the noise and narrow band and conforms to artificial. Furthermore, when they go into greater detail in the various other analyses posted below on their own website, that the signal is modulated, the signal is moving, all the things that we said Friday night, right?
Yes.
The signal is downshifted from the original detection signal posted by Dorr last week. They ignore all that and claim with a wave of their hand, oh, it's just interference from a satellite. Now, NORAD, remember our friends in Cheyenne Mountain?
Yes.
Published a very comprehensive list of everything in orbit down to nuts and bolts and astronaut gloves that were lost during the space program 30 years ago. Do the ATCA astronomers take the trouble to look up in the computer any satellite that might conform to their, quote, interfering signal?
Well, you would think that would be the first thing they would do.
They do not. In fact, they say it might possibly be related, and then they never follow up. Oh, and, oh, by the way, this whopping signal, that incredible graph you're seeing on our both our websites, it was a total of 10 seconds of observation time.
10 seconds.
That's it, boys and girls. They devoted a full 10 seconds to the possible discovery of the millennium.
And then we had another large site that, wasn't it in Germany, that said that they found nothing. What was it, their quote, except for a few anomalies?
Oh, no, this was Harvard.
Harvard.
Jonathan,
oh, that's right. There you are, Harvard.
Space,
thank you.
And foot dish at Harvard.
And they found nothing but a few anomalies.
Which they never posted.
A few anomalies.
Yep.
What the hell does a few anomalies mean?
I don't know, but my conclusion is, and we'll in the next half hour get into the substance, is that we're dealing with a reality and a hoax to cover the reality. And the hoax is somehow involved, I believe, with the spooks, with the intelligence agencies.
The people like the NSA.
Because I totally agree. It is against federal law to misuse the official insignia and seals of the United States government.
They're not humored by that kind of stuff.
They do not have a sense of humor.
No, they don't. They really don't. We found that out, and so we know. And so here's this big NSA seal there where all the info used to be. Now, either the NSA really walked in which case you wouldn't think you'd see the NSA seal. You'd just see a site with no DNA any longer.
It had disappeared.
Yeah.
This where, I mean, I know that you think now the C in my name stands for conspiracy, right?
Well, I can't resist the fun.
Now, of course you can't, all right? You'll be out there on the runway with the ape suit, right? the problem we have here is that we're getting a lot of intelligence that there is a war going on inside the intelligence community regarding information such as this. So my proposal is that the insignia on that website is real tonight. It's posted by the fraction that's trying to help. And they have the clout politically to keep it there because they are obviously NSA as well.
I have a simplistic talk show host question.
Okay.
That seal. Have we confirmed that that really is the seal of the NSA?
Yes.
It is.
It is. Including, you know, the eagle is sitting. By the way, the eagle is really the phoenix. You knew that, didn't you?
On a perch at 19.5 degrees.
No, it's on a key.
Okay. No.
Remember Bamford's The Puzzle Palace? The NSA is involved with codes and signals and eavesdropping and all that good stuff.
Oh, yes, I know.
The eagle is sitting on a key, which is their cute idea back when they formed this back in the 1940s, 47, of symbolism. I mean, all of this is symbolic. You just have to take it apart. No, that's the real seal. The point is you cannot misuse the real seal unless you have federal authority to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And someone will come and take you away, or they will close you down, or they will send nasty letters like they did to Keith. The question is, it's only a matter of time. However, if there is fractionalization...
But there were so many thousands of people going to that site, tens or hundreds of thousands...
Absolutely.
...that by now the NSA would have been aware of it by a long shot.
Absolutely. And the fact that it's still there means to me, in this model, that there is a faction tonight that wants us to follow the trail, that's basically using that as evidence that there is a, that there is, you know, where there's fire or where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yes.
And it is designed to keep us moving in the direction of further confirmation, which means we need more radio observatories that, in fact, can look at a signal like the Australian Telescope Array and follow it. We have posted on this update tonight, the the astronomers from down under who are just horsing around.
Well, Richard, this thing on the, we'll get to that. This thing on the Australian site, if they're saying it was some sort of interference.
That's what they're saying.
Then clearly they would have cited what it was because they catalog everything that it could be, and they would know exactly what it is.
They should.
And they would say, in their release, yes, look at that gigantic signal, but that is satellite so-and-so.
Yeah, 957 DOD launched November 15, 1995, something like that.
Something
like that. They did not.
All right, hold on. So now you're beginning to get a sense of where we are tonight. Mysterious NSA seals showing up. Australian reception of gigantic signals that they dismiss as interference but refuse to identify. The plot thickens.
Kingdom of Nye, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Once again, here I am. And
it's more networks, more magazines. You know, Barnum said it best. I don't care what you say about me, but spell my name right. More people now know the concept of SETI, know there might be something out there, know there's controversy, know there's people who they can join or they can talk to. I mean, that's balderdash.
I think actually it would raise support for SETI. Of course,
because the SETI now is not official. Ostensibly, there is no official search for extraterrestrial intelligence being sponsored by any government anywhere on the planet tonight. It's all an amateur effort. And what brings amateurs together? Conversation, interest, you know, social gatherings.
I believe you're correct, yes.
Minds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all this has done is make, it's almost like the Republicans and Democrats and the Clinton versus the Starr thing. You know, if you really don't like what's been said and what's gone on, then you'll redouble your efforts. So the stuff coming out of the officials is frankly balderdash.
All right, so in our effort to get to the truth, what do you think we know tonight? Lay out as best you can what you think we know, and what you think the three signals we do know about in England, in Japan, and now in Australia, what they mean, and why you believe this is real, being covered by a hoax.
Yep. Well, let me start with the hoax part, all right, because I want to put some data on the table. We had, as you heard me say a few nights ago, actual people in England who I was able to call upon, friends, people I've known for, well, in this case, 30 years, who I trust implicitly, so I gave them the task to go and find out. I wanted them to get into the press conference. That was our original idea. So I sent them data on how to locate and all this, mm-hmm. using the information that was on the GeoCities website.
Mm-hmm.
And the following morning, I got a response that was, frankly, very, very disturbing.
Really?
I think we had a heads up on this before. Even GeoCities posted the notification that the Doors press conference had been canceled. This is what my correspondent said. I have called, this was on Tuesday, the 3rd, all right? I have called the British Astronomical Association, who say they know nothing about the press conference. Then I called the Royal Society of Chemistry, who handle the Scientific Society's lecture theater. They looked into it and called back saying there is no such press conference scheduled there tomorrow. In fact, the Environment Agency has the theater booked for the entire day. I have spoken to the British Interplanetary Society, the British National Space Center, the editor of Astronomy Now magazine, and even rang The Sun and asked for Nathan Keyes. Remember, he was the correspondent who was supposed to have gotten a press release.
Yes.
And the GeoCities site posted the information from Nathan Keyes?
Yes.
Well, guess what? Nathan Keyes does not exist as far as they know. Well, all right. Continue.
Okay, but here's, well, let me interject one thing. You know what made this story jump out as real to an awful lot of people? The fact that the BBC, which is normally not exactly an organization that jumps on anything, did a rather extensive report on the whole Pegasus business, and the BBC just doesn't do that.
Dr. David Whitehouse. By the way, that's an interesting name, isn't it? Whitehouse?
Whitehouse, yes.
He is a Jodrell Bank radio astronomer, PhD in astronomy, good credentials, solid, now is the science editor at the BBC. He did jump on the story. If the BBC had not posted that initial story, then none of the rest of this would have happened. So Nathan Cohen, who is the Boston University astronomer who assailed this whole thing early in the Business Wire.
Right.
He has been engaged in a kind of an interesting back-and-forth vitriolic debate on some website. I think it's MSNBC's. Or maybe it's Borderland Science, Michael Thoreau's page, to the effect that if Whitehouse hadn't made this a story, nobody would have cared and it would have died as a hoax as it should. And Whitehouse says, wait a minute, we posted both sides. And then Cohen says, well, there was no other side. It was a hoax. And then Whitehouse said, but the SETI League says in their website, apparent hoax, leaving the door open that the signal could be true, and on and on and on. So it's kind of disintegrated into a he said thing. My correspondent went on to say, in trying to dig up information on the press conference, this is a week and a half later,
right,
it has been interesting, but it is obviously a hoax. Remember, this was before the plug was pulled, before the announcement of cancellation.
Right.
We found out hours before that there was no scheduling of a press conference. This is critical. The information, this person goes on to say, is definitely wrong. I spoke directly with the man who runs the lecture theater, Colin Powell. How's that for a coincidence?
Mm.
Who also knows nothing about it. Finally, I do not believe that a press conference was ever planned. Certainly, it was never promoted, and the press was not invited to attend. The hall, as described, was not booked. I am suspicious. An MSNBC reporter did a story about it.
Mm-hmm.
He contacted Paul Doerr by email. That's today. And
the
response from Doerr was a denial that he was involved in anything of the sort.
Do we know this is the Doerr?
No, we don't.
Oh, we don't. So it is a Doerr.
This is a Doerr, supposedly, who claims that he worked at Siemens Plessy, which is the aerospace firm that appeared on the GeoCities website.
All right.
A couple of years ago, and now works for a small company, and that someone stole his bio, his curriculum vitae,
yeah,
somehow, and put it on the web with a picture, with a black line across the eyes to kind of make it, you know, impossible to recognize, and that this whole thing has been fabricated. Well, I find all of this fascinating because what we now know from our own digging, our own on-the-ground, you know, soles of your foot shoes,
yes,
shoe leather,
yes,
the press conference was never even scheduled. So it was a carefully planned, proactive hoax.
Proactive.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, what it might mean, and I know exactly where you're going, living up to your middle initial, that there really is a signal there, and the best way to squash it is to do exactly what they did and perpetrate what turns out to be an obvious hoax to cover a reality.
Exactly.
My God, what a world we live in.
Oh, my God. Now you're going to tell me that we don't run, black ops operations?
Hey, I've got something for you, Richard. Can I take a second and give this to you? This will blow your mind away. Now, you know about remote viewing.
Yes.
Ed Dames and a million others, right, who remote view.
There's even a hyperdimensional model behind it.
Yeah, we had, as you know, a government program that ran for 20 years. They did a big show on Nightline, and they said they no longer do anything like that.
Yep.
Do you know what I've got in my hand? I've got an ad for the CIA. It appeared in a newspaper, and it's designed to appeal to students to join the CIA. It says Central Intelligence Agency. It's a real newspaper story. It says student program, summer 1999. Listen to me closely. College sophomores and juniors are invited to apply for CIA student programs for summer 1999 program. programs are designed to give promising undergraduate and graduate students the opportunity to gain practical work experience to complement their academic studies. While earning competitive income, students will participate in meaningful work assignments commensurate with their academic training. Housing assistance is provided. Other work programs for students are also available. Desired majors: electrical engineering, computer science, mathematics, economics, physics, remote sensing, languages, international studies, logistics supply, and it goes on and on and on. I've got the whole ad. Must be U.S. citizen, minimum GPA of at least 2.75 required, blah, blah. And then you can fill out the form, and it is a real CIA ad. Now, Richard, remote sensing?
Okay, now, in truth, for all the skeptics who are screaming into the radio at the moment, remote sensing is a technical term applying to sensors in spacecraft above the Earth. You know,
it's also the term that was applied to...
Exactly. It could be a double entendre.
I don't know about that. So I've scanned this little CIA ad and sent it to Keith, and he's going to have it up on the website. I think it's the remote sensing that we all know and love.
Yeah. Now, remember, the door press conference, moving our conversation back,
yes,
and linking to this, claimed it was canceled because of the NSA. British government guys show up from, GHQ, whatever, and one American from the NSA. Well, all that's well and good, except now we have a GeoCity site devoid of data with the official NSA seal up there, and it's up there. And up there.
And up there. As far as I know, it's still up there. I'll check here in a minute.
I checked just 30 seconds ago.
It's still there.
Okay. If this is an official spook operation.
Yes.
Designed to cover the trail with false whatever. You know, cry wolf once and no one ever pays attention.
Yes.
And there is a break within the agency.
Yes.
Half of the guys don't really believe this. They would like data to come out. They believe the Constitution maybe should be followed. And the other half is trying to cover everyone's, whatever.
Yeah.
We may be seeing the evidence of a breakdown, as I said tonight with Dames. There is a breakdown at all levels in the command authority. And this may be an indication, because there is, boys and girls, a real signal out there tonight. A whomping Jodie Foster-type signal, which is on our combined websites. Go look.
Yeah, go look. I mean, it is there. That's the thing about this. And so, I do follow your chain of conspiratorial logic. I really do, Richard. If there really was a signal and you wanted to preempt the press and people like me, you would do exactly what they have just done. You would perpetrate what would be disclaimed quickly as an obvious hoax, and attention would be turned away forevermore, like swamp gas did for...
It doesn't take very much, because they have zero curiosity. Zero. I mean, the press now is nothing compared to the press was when I was at CBS, and it wasn't that damn good then, frankly.
I understand the French also have a site up now. I sent this to you earlier.
Yes, and I have gone into it, and it's all in French.
It's all in French.
I have sent it to one of our French experts.
Damn French.
And I will get a read probably by tomorrow on what it really says. It looks to me like a compilation of the various stories.
It may be. What we ought to do, Keith, if you're out there, and would you put this French site up, because there's plenty of people in my audience that speak French, so we can at least get some feedback on this. So, Keith, if you would put that French site up, even though it's all in French, somebody will go over there and translate for us.
The thing we have to keep in mind, Art, is that a couple of months ago, we were given a heads up by sources that I know that have given us good information, corroborative information from the agencies, that there was an imminent arrival of something and a landing. All right?
Right.
And we have been checking this out 6 ways from Sunday, and frankly, initially it was like, oh, give me a break, because there have been so many rumors in the UFO community for all these years. And remember, we don't do UFOs. We're looking at artifacts, things that stand still, NASA data, image enhancement, experts that know what they're talking about. So UFOs I avoid like the plague, or at least I have. But this was so persistent and came from such levels with such corroboration, ultimately including, NASA. We now know what it's called. The project is called Project Samson.
Mm-hmm.
Samson. What does Samson do mythologically? We need to talk about mythology tonight a lot, because it's all through this story. What is Samson? Remember the guy with the long hair that was cut by Delilah so
yes.
his strength, you know, disappeared?
Yes.
Then the hair grows back, and what does he do? For his last act, his big finale, he pulls down the temple towers, the pillars, which is a metaphor for shattering the current paradigm.
Well, certainly a spacecraft arriving in our vicinity and to our planet would shatter into little teeny pieces just about everything.
Yep. Now, given that we know that there is hyperdimensional technology, that we can see it on the shuttle videos, that we have all kinds of reports that you get every single night from Peter Davenport, going back to the 40s and before, of weird things going bump in the night, you know, flitting around.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that a real interstellar spaceship has to crawl along at a mere 4,000 miles per second is ludicrous.
Well, unless they want to give us time to think about it.
Not to the mainstream. Remember, the audience is listening to us tonight, Art, is a very select high end of the general American culture.
Yes.
Most people on this planet tonight think that the most extraordinary advanced technology is being inhabited by a guy wearing a bunny hat with glasses who was a U.S. senator. You know, this white thing with wings.
Mm-hmm.
That's the epitome of advanced space technology. For that crowd, something coming in at 4,000 miles per second is going to look like something out of Star Trek. That's the mainstream SETI crowd, who most of them don't even believe in the ability to go between stars, let alone have spaceships drop in for dinner.
Mm.
So if you wanted to stage an event, this gets more complicated.
Yes.
If you want to basically bring people up to speed that there is another reality around us out there,
right?
Then if you create the mainstream version of E.T. First Contact, starting with Signal, then moving on to Kraft Lands in Desert, remember the American Southwest, and then appropriate responses by government.
The inevitable destruction of Pahrump.
Well, it's not landing in Pahrump, all right?
Well, we're in the
Phoenix
south.
Is the
I know,
problem,
but
it's not landing
west.
In Pahrump. Then this fits that model. And again, I'm calling this model scenarios, prophecies.
We'll get to that in a second. Richard, did you know that the destruction of Pahrump depicted in Mars Attacks, even though it was Pahrump they destroyed, do you know where that was actually shot?
You're going to tell me.
Arizona. I'm not kidding. That's the truth. That's the absolute truth. They shot that scene in Arizona and called it Pahrump. I couldn't resist. From the high desert in Pahrump, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA. Then 803. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
Hey, want to be a CIA agent? Well, I told you I got that ad from the newspaper, and I just scanned it and sent it to Keith, and we've got it up on the website right now, and I'll be damned if one of the qualifications sought is not remote sensing. I'm serious. Go look at the ad for yourself. Maybe, I guess I'm doing them a big favor. I bet they get a lot of new agents out of this. But I'm serious. It says remote sensing. Go take a look. It's on the website now at www.artbell.com. We're talking about Pegasus. of course. Have you seen the NSA symbol up there? Where all the information used to be? That is the information that that was present up until Richard discovered what they found in Australia. Anyway, we'll get back to Richard C. Hoagland in just a moment. And we'll kind of catch you up and proceed. Ladies and gentlemen, simply announcing the best new radio in the world. I told you over the last 2 weeks, I told you don't buy an AM radio. Tonight, I'm telling you to buy an AM radio, not just any AM radio. This radio has been developed in secret over the last, Bob could tell us, and I should know, I would say about the last year and a half. This radio has been under development in a deep black ops project at the Sea Crane Company in conjunction with Sanjin. It is a radio that is designed specifically for the AM radio listener, the talk show listener, and there is nothing in the world that can beat it. I don't care what you want to put up against it. The GE series of super radios, the Sony series of great radios. I don't care what you want to put up against this, the Grundigs of the world. Look, the new CC radio that I am announcing as of tonight is simply the most sensitive selective radio in the world. You will hear things on this radio. Well, to give you an example, I think Bob earlier today talked to Jack Swanson, who is the esteemed, actually, I think he's like an operations director or something now at KSFO in San Francisco, KGO KSFO. And he took it inside the building where he normally can barely receive, you know, it's very shielded and he can barely receive the signal. And he got a copy, he got a CC radio and took it in there, and it was full strength. I mean, just kaboom. That's how much difference. This radio is in a whole new league, not to be confused with the SETI league, a whole new league. What it receives is AM, like a bandit, FM, TV audio, and weather. It has a built-in weather alert. It's got a sleep timer. It operates on D cells, 4 D cell batteries. You'll get 250 hours or better. And it plugs into the wall. Comes equipped to do all of that. It has a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. You're going to love it. And a 1-year warranty, and it's brand new, and you're going to have to get it now because it's going to be sold out really, really fast. $159.95 for the best radio in the world. If you want one, you call Bob Crane in the morning at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. The Sea Crane Company. That is the announcement that I've been dying to make for a long time, but I couldn't say a word. My lips were sealed. Get on the phone and get one before they're all gone. The first shipment is available as of right now. I-151. The other reason you want to go to my website is to go down to the name Richard C. Hoagland and definitely click on Australian Confirmation of ET Signal. And that is what we are indeed discussing with Richard C. Hoagland, who is back now. Richard?
You are having such fun tonight, Art. I'm glad to see you're in a good frame of mind.
Hey, guess what? Scotty, as you call him.
Good old Scotty Rowland.
Keith has found the French site.
Excellent.
And he says that he has found an English version of the French site.
Oh.
If you just back up in the URL address a little bit, apparently you find some English stuff. Now, whether they actually cover the Pegasus stuff in English or not, we've yet to see, but Keith is on the track of it.
He is a good man.
Yes, he is. All right. So, again, it is your belief, in summary, that this whole Pegasus business that was on GeoCities, now covered with the scary NSA symbol, with all the information taken down, that in itself is very weird, is a well-orchestrated, and it was well-orchestrated, hoax to
I think part of it was a hoax. I'm beginning to think the door part was a hoax.
To cover up the fact that there really is a signal.
That's right. And, you know, it's that old joke, if you build it, they will come.
Mm.
What the GeoCities site did was to basically put out the story based around, in part, the BBC, Dr. Whitehouse, the BBC science editor.
Which is really where all this took off. Without the BBC folks, I think that this never would have blown up. The
BBC ran
the story, and then, of course, everybody took off.
So, of course, that raises the question, does Dr. Whitehouse, as an alum of Jodrell Bank, know something that we don't know and was hoping that there'd be other confirmations? In other words, what we're really getting into is a very philosophical area. It's kind of like why the Australians got a signal but claim they haven't got one. I don't think it's conspiracy. I think it's educational dysfunction. It's the Wright brothers thing. It's the 1903 story of flying heavier than aircraft in a psychological environment, a political environment where that is known to be impossible. And as you said, they flew for 2 years and the American press never wrote a story. Because, of course, it had to be a hoax. I think the SETI people are in the same vein. And we know this because of our very sad and long experience with the Cydonia problem. Remember, the main problem that Cydonia presents is that aliens don't stay safely at home, picking up, you know, telephones and calling, you know, across interstellar space.
Right.
They pick up the spaceships and move and put down roots and set up colonies and build cities and pyramids and bases. That's what Cydonia is saying, if it is real. And of course, I affirm tonight that the data is overwhelming and it's real.
All right, let me just quickly, shortly interrupt to say that apparently we don't have the English portion of this. Keith, on the links page, has posted Le Signal d'EQ Pegasi, and it's all in French. And so if somebody who can speak French would be kind enough to go up there and give us a summary of what it says, we'd all be very grateful. You'd think they could put it in English, but no.
By the way,
the French is up there.
By the way, let me digress into a bit of astronomical trivia.
All right.
Stars have various designations. They have proper names, like Procyon and Aldebaran and Sirius and, Canis, whatever, all right?
Right.
Those are basically from the Arabs. They also have numbers. They also have Latin designations, alpha this, theta that, et cetera. I'm sorry, Greek designations.
Mm.
The EQ business is interesting because you eventually run out of names and numbers and letters and you know, there are only 26 letters in the alphabet. So the EQ, the two letters, stand for a double star. Double stars are given in certain catalogs, double letter designations indicating it's a variable star.
Gotcha.
The star in question, EQ Pegasi, is 22 light years away. I mean, no one's going to forget that after this week, right? It's a little tiny dwarf system composed of two little M-type stars, which are dim red dwarfs about 1/10,000th of the sun's brightness each.
I think it'd be really cool to look up into the sky and see not one, but two suns.
Wouldn't it? We saw that in 2010.
We did, yes.
The ending?
I recall it very well indeed.
Jupiter turned into a red dwarf?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, you got these two little red dwarf stars.
The NSA jamming is back, by the way.
I know. They found us. And that is very remarkable because it hasn't been, you know, here for ever since I've been here, and then suddenly, as this whole story breaks, we get jamming on my phone lines.
Okay, I think the folks can probably hear it. It's this weird tone.
Anyway, so you have these two red dwarf stars, which are not the kind of places Elton John said to raise your kids.
That's right.
And you get a statement initially from Shostak back in September that he was looking, raising the question, why would he look? Because there's not supposed to be anybody there anyway. And he detects a brief signal at 1210 megahertz. It goes away, you know, it's not real, it's interference. Nothing happens till mid-October when so-called Paul Dohr gets a signal.
Well, they did get very, very excited about it for a short time at SETI. I mean, I talked to Seth and he said, look, the blood pressure began to rise. We thought we really had it.
I want to know why he was looking.
Yeah,
because it's no place to look.
At an unlikely candidate.
Oh, incredibly unlikely. I mean, kind of like the last place to look. It reminds me of that old joke about the drunk who loses his car keys.
It is true that Seth did say it was an unlikely candidate. So you're right. Why did he look?
So given you've got limited time on the most extraordinary telescope in the world, and time is money and time is time,
why would you
look where there's no hope of finding something?
That's a very good point, Richard.
Thank you. Anyway, the whole point of this is that the EQ designation is also bizarre. there are more coincidences in this story, which hopefully we'll get through as we go through the morning.
All right.
Because EQ is a designation of a double star, right? Flaring star.
Yes.
Sorry. The M-type dwarfs do flare. They light like sun flares, except 1,000 times or 10,000 times brighter, which would irradiate any planets with life on, by the way. Which is another reason why Seth looking is weird. But here's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
EQ, Pegasi. Pegasus is the flying horse, right? The horse of the wings?
Yes.
Okay. EQ, Latin. Equine, equus, horse.
Horse.
Of all the stars to get a signal from, it's the one flare star in the whole Pegasus system with a designation that refers to Pegasus. EQ, equus, which is horse in Latin, for those who people who never took Latin or fell asleep during Latin. And on and on. In other words, if you then flash forward the film, there was running on CNN last night, and has been running for months, two commercials, twin commercials, for Quest, which is a communications company. You know, ride the light, fiber optic,
communications. I've seen it.
All right. You've seen the one with the fisherman in the boat?
Sure.
And the brilliant, flaming, Tunguska-sized asteroid entering the atmosphere, and everything goes into slow-mo, and it's very stylized.
Yes.
The other commercial, with the young blonde, with the horse.
Yes.
And the stark landscape and the pyramid-shaped mountains, and she takes this disc-shaped stone and she flings it across the water, skipping it across the water, and there's this gorgeous shot from under the water as this disc-shaped stone skips, and there are these zeros and ones, obviously communications from the flying saucer-type stone skipping across the water with lightnings flashing around the horse. The horse, of course, is
horse.
Pegasus.
The horse, of course.
It is the lightning of Jove that Pegasus was supposed to stand for. The stone is, of course, the spacecraft, the probe. The signals are the signals coming, carrying data. And let's see, am I missing anything?
Hey, Richard, can I play this game, too?
Absolutely.
All right, what is it? What is that thing? I'm trying to think. What is that thing they call the... I believe they rolled it through the Roman gates...
The Trojan horse.
See, I couldn't resist. Sorry.
The point is, if you're going to decode this, if we're looking at signals sent to various audiences to alert them that something big is going down,
yes.
You want to delay everyone knowing until it's inevitable,
then
you want a select group to know,
yes.
Because they're in on it,
yes.
This is the scenario you'd follow. It's right out of the textbooks. You know, if you were going to open up a line for intelligence officers and agents and military people who are sick to death of this and would like to tell us the truth...
Do you want to do that?
Absolutely. During the Q&A, we need to open a line dedicated to folks that know what's going on and are willing to tell the American people the truth.
You realize that when you do that, you're going to get...
all kinds of noise.
Oh, Richard, you're going to get... I'm perfectly willing to do it, but I'm telling you right now that what you're going to get, it's going to be entertaining, and then some of it, some of it might be the real McCoy.
Yeah, and remember, we are holding information back. We have a way of testing whether it's true or false. And every night after I've done the show, you know, this week it's been kind of Art and Dick.
Well, in the first hour, updates mostly.
Yep.
Yes.
I have gotten calls from intelligence sources providing additional data on the projected landing on December 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Project Samson.
Mm-hmm.
NASA near with December 7th is one of the phrases that was used. And December 7th, by the way, folks, is a 19.5 ceremonial Egyptian calendar date. That's, by the way, the day that Pearl Harbor was attacked, as you all know.
Yes.
All right.
It fits right in with my Trojan horse thing.
Yeah, but where was Pearl Harbor?
Hawaii.
And where is Hawaii?
In the Pacific.
And geodetically?
19.5.
Exactly.
I'm getting so good at this.
Well,
it comes from listening to you for a long time now.
Look, you know, part of me smiles when you make these comments, and part of me really gets irritated because I am a serious person, Art. I have been conducting a
serious
investigation.
I know, but life is short, Richard. You got to have some fun. I mean, I have
learned
from you.
I
listen to you.
Maybe Ed Dames is the fun. Maybe blowing up the sun is fun. But I am very serious, and my colleagues are serious, and this is a serious investigation.
Well, I give the right answer. Didn't I? 19.5.
It is a pattern. All codes begin in patterns. All science begins in patterns. Before you know what you're dealing with, you look for a pattern. We have found a staggering pattern that is so overwhelmingly recursive. I would please recommend that in your copious spare time, you go to the web and you download the Call from Pegasus link that we have there.
Well, you've got to give an explanation, I think, of the three signals that we do know about, or we think we know about, England, Japan, and Australia, and how they link in a way that makes sense.
It's back to Art, if you build it, they will come. Let's assume the door thing was a red herring. The Paul Door, his name was cribbed, his bio was stolen.
Fine.
The GeoCity site, which, by the way, is based at Cape Canaveral. What's a Cape Canaveral?
The Space Center?
NASA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know that the Boeing Amateur Radio Astronomy Group is also on the Cape Canaveral GeoCities website, which I found out just a few minutes ago?
No, I didn't know that.
Well, I found it out about 30 minutes ago. There is an agency which is supposed to explore space. There are dissident members of that agency, like Ken Johnston, Jr., who have leaked extraordinary data, who is a Mason, who has provided compelling confirmation of a lot of the pattern that we have decoded, that NASA's been up to extraordinary ceremonial stuff for decades.
All right, but again, Richard.
And when I say NASA, I don't mean all of NASA. I mean a select elite, an in-crowd that don't talk to anybody else but themselves.
I hear you. All right, but I'm trying to dig for the center of what you're presenting, and I know what's on your webpage, Richard. I want you to explain it to the audience.
Okay, so
you want to be serious? Be serious.
We have a red herring. The Paul Door false trail.
Got that.
You build it, and then real guys show up because of you. Art, I got to tell you, you know, I'm thinking back, and I'm saying to myself, if it weren't for Art and his persistence on this story, and I must tell everybody, when the hoax was revealed, when the press conference was canceled, I was ready to basically sign off this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even the guy with C in the middle of his name felt that we had all been had. And it was talking to you, Art, and your nose for news, your you know, intuitive bump, you kept saying, there's something here, there's something here.
Something going on, yeah.
So last night, after we left, you know, I went digging through the web and found the Australian signal. And I must say that you were partly responsible. Because after you're at this for 15 years, and no one seems to give a damn, and the agency goes on and pull the wool over everybody's eyes and make cat box images out of extraordinary data on Mars,
mm-hmm.
you get a little bit tired.
Cynical.
And cynical.
Yeah.
And you begin to think, does anybody really care for the truth? Is the Constitution going to slip through our fingers like sand through the hourglass?
Only if we let it.
Only if, yes. Well, I have to be reminded, too. And you very gently reminded me. So I went the extra mile and came up with the Australian confirmation. The signals that we saw from Guernsey and from Japan, I believe, are real honest amateurs who came to the well with data because of you, because of the visibility that you started on Friday night last with this story.
All right. Richard, we're going to lay this out for everybody, and there is a connection between these signals in a way that makes absolute sense, and that's what I want you to lay out, and that is, in fact, what's on his website, Serious Stuff. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to close down all my phone lines. Everybody hang up out there, and only people who have some serious information on this story call, and that applies to all phone lines. Everybody hang up. Only people who have serious information call.
Oh,
talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
It is, and it's a gigantic story. No matter how you look at this, the BBC, I guess, broke the story into the mainstream press, and that's really how it took off. The GeoCities site that contained the information now has only an NSA, that's National Security Agency, logo on it, as though it has been taken over by the NSA. Richard believes, and I tend to agree, that this is an obviously easily detected hoax to cover something that may be very much real. And there are signals that have been received, the latest from Australia. You're welcome to go take a look yourself. It is a thumping, gigantic, unmistakable spike of a Jodie Foster-type signal. And you can see it. Go to my website, scroll down Richard Hoagland's name, and you'll see the Australian reference. Click on that, and it's a monster of a signal. So, one way or the other, there's some gigantic story going on here, and we're trying to get to the bottom of it. All of my lines are hereby closed off. All of them. Any of you who have any information about this, of substance, about this specific Pegasus thing, are welcome to call, and we'll sort of sift through the calls. So that applies to all lines. Everybody else, just sit back and listen to what we get. If you are in a government agency and you have information or no information about this, then we want to hear from you. Otherwise, sit back, turn your volume up, and listen, because there's just no telling what may happen. So that applies to all phone lines now. They are hereby shut down for calls for any other reason. If you have information regarding the Pegasus story, feel free to call any line you can get through on. Otherwise, sit back and listen. Well, my CIA ad may not be about remote viewing. There is another kind of remote sensing. But whether or not that's it, I have no way of knowing. I did scan the CIA ad this person sent me, and it stands alone as an interesting ad, whether or not it refers to that kind of remote sensing. You've got to see it. If you've never seen a CIA recruitment ad, this is your opportunity to see it. They should send me a thank you letter. I'm sure I'm going to get lots of agents for them for putting this up on the website. But it's a real honest to God, maybe I better not mix God and the CIA. Honest to goodness, CIA recruitment ad. Once again, here is Richard C. Hoagland. You notice I left your C alone now.
That's nice.
Anyway, you
wanted to talk about the signals.
Yeah, I do. I really want to lay out what you think you know about.
Well, all right. As of Friday, we projected, based on only DOORS data and the Guernsey report, which showed that there was a difference, in signal strength and all that. We said, look, suppose this isn't coming from the star. Suppose it's so loud, so strong, because it's nearby in the neighborhood. It's a probe. Back in the 1950s, a American astronomer named Ronald Bracewell at Stanford, who did a lot of very extraordinary astronomy. In fact, Bracewell is kind of the father of the CAT scan.
Yes.
He produced a mathematical technique for taking images and with computer making three-dimensional data slices. And he started it with astronomy and basically observations of the sun, and eventually the medical profession took it over, and that's why a lot of people are alive tonight, because of Ronald Bracewell. Well, many years ago, he was involved with Sagan and others in this whole concept of, you know, ETs calling us on the phone. And Bracewell, being a pretty neat guy, said, look, it seems silly to wait at home and to try to probe star systems with radio beams, because it takes, you know, decades or centuries to get a return.
Right.
Return signal, an answer.
Right.
He said it would be better to send automated probes, robots. We'll do it, you know, in 100 years, 200 years, you know, just wait a while. This was back at the beginning of the space age, remember, before Sputnik. And he conceived of the idea of multiple thousands of robots being trundled out on launch pads and sent out into the galaxy by somebody out there, or somebodies, going into orbit around candidate stars that had likely Earth-type planets, and just waiting, and waiting, and waiting, and waiting. And when the civilization developing, you know, from caves and fire and horse and buggies and steam engines and all that, eventually invented radio, a la Tesla and Marconi, this probe that had been hanging around in the star system in some kind of stable orbit, you know, would pick up the signals. It would wake up, and it would then send a message. It would place a phone call. In essence, a very loud and big and boisterous message to call attention to itself, and it would begin to move toward the planet.
Right.
That was Bracewell, mainstream as you can get. So I propose this, and none of these SETI guys say, hey, wait a minute. Hoagland is resurrected from the archives, one of our own. Maybe we should look at this. Instead, they all take a stick out and beat that poor signal to death because it's not fixed in frequency and it's not fixed on the sky. It's moving, boys and girls. It's not stuck at EQ Pegasi. It's not 22 light years distance. Whatever it is, it's close and it's moving and it's changing frequency. Now, a few little technical facts. Don't bore people here, but a few technical facts.
All right.
Everyone's saying, you know, in the mainstream, oh, it's just an interference from a satellite. When they say that, they don't mean one of the probes NASA sent out, you know, Pioneers or Voyagers, because you were very right at the top of the show. They're heading in the wrong direction, Art. They're going away from us.
Right.
Their signals would be redshifted.
Right, not blue shifted.
Their signal is blue shifted.
See, I do listen to what you say. I never knew what these things meant, but I absorbed enough to be able to say that.
Friends can disagree, at least agreeably disagree. So it can't be a distant probe. It's moving, you know, in the wrong direction and much too... I mean, look, Voyager leaving the solar system.
Coming toward us. It has a blue shift, and that means it's coming toward us, right?
Yeah. Assuming, of course, that the frequency is 1420, that's the rest frequency, and the 1450 plus is an indication of the signal rising in frequency because it's headed toward us like a bat out of hell.
Dumb question, maybe. Would this, whatever it is, be too far away to be optically observed?
Oh, I mean, the physical size of this thing is, you know, what, 30 feet, 50 feet, 100 feet? You're not going to see it with an optical telescope.
Okay.
Now, if it was firing engines, you know, good old thrusters, rockets.
Yes.
You know, Star Trek impulse engines.
Yes.
And not on warp drive.
Yes.
Then as it slows down, it would create a huge optical something, a cloud of something. If it was hot hydrogen, let's assume this thing is really, really primitive, has nuclear engines, all right, and is slowing down by firing retro rockets, nuclear engines like Bessard proposed.
Mm-hmm.
Those would produce a cloud of hydrogen that would fluoresce, that would be brilliantly visible in a part of the spectrum you can't see from the ground, from ground-based telescopes. But you could see them if you're in space.
Okay.
They would produce a brilliant visible glow at about 1,200 angstroms. I love to say angstrom, okay. 1,200 angstroms, which is the Lyman Alpha line of hydrogen. Now, guess what? The shuttle is up there this week carrying John Glenn, right?
It certainly is.
It carries in the payload bay, sitting on the corner, on the side of the payload bay, a Hitchhiker extreme ultraviolet experiment with a little telescope, which can see Lyman Alpha ultraviolet radiation.
Yeah, and they put the satellite out for the period of time they're up there and then retrieve it.
Okay, that's the Spartan. That's looking at the sun. This is a separate experiment that's clipped to the payload bay.
Oh.
That we're not really supposed to know about.
Really?
Yes. Now, wait a minute. You don't suppose that NASA's coordinating John Glenn's flight and all of this and is looking at this thing in the optical region? Because remember, even if this is all real, if we're looking at a probe decelerating, sending at 1450 plus, all right?
Yes.
That doesn't mean it's the only frequency it's broadcasting on. That may be just the beacon. Suppose there's information coded in the beacon, which the big boys have already decoded, telling them where to switch for I Love Lucy or Star Trek or the program, in other words, the X-Files, Interstellar X-Files. Imagine, Chris. In other words, if we're limited to the sparse data we currently have, And we're dealing with people like the folks in Australia who don't seem to understand a whopping wow signal when they see it. I mean, how much intelligence is going on here that's below the water level? In other words, can people be that damn dumb, or are we all being conned?
You know, I wish I knew. I wish I knew the answer to that. Let's just take a couple of calls that have been waiting. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hi, where are you?
I'm in San Diego.
Okay, what do you know?
Well, Alta Vista has a translation program on the page, and we ran the web page from France through the translator.
Oh?
And the title on the page is A Planet Around Pegasi.
What?
It goes on, and it's a little bit choppy, so it's kind of hard to read, but it names two people from the Observatory of Geneva. The names are Michael Mayer and Dieter Queloz, I believe.
Really?
And these two people have found an object of large mass, approximately half times the size of Jupiter, and they believe it's orbiting around a star at Pegasi. And
double star.
EQ Pegasi, yes.
But EQ is the designation of the star system. Stars in the system.
Do they specify which one it is?
What it says is orbit around the star of type solar 51 Peg.
That's 51 Pegasi. That is nothing to do with EQ. That's the star system that the guys in San Francisco found by Doppler data several years ago. Had a Jovian type, a Jupiter-sized planet orbiting in a very weird elliptical orbit. That's nearby in the sky, but it's not nearby physically.
They go on to say, they talk about the spectrograph analysis, and the graphic that they have is very similar to the one on your page, and it talks about the large object having a orbit of 4.2293 days.
Yeah, this is the 51 Pegasus story, which is old news. Has nothing to do with EQ Pegasi, which is a separate star system.
All right.
In the same constellation.
Caller, we appreciate that. And listen, just very quickly, caller, what do you think about all this so far?
I have a hard time believing that the whole thing isn't just a hoax. And
why?
Hoax to cover up hoax.
Why?
Well, no, let him finish. Why to cover up, he was saying to cover up something.
Well, I think initially someone got himself in a little bit deeper than what he wanted to by trying to explain something before he had all the answers. And so he concocted some hoax to explain his story, and it just kind of tumbled on from there.
All right, so that man, Richard, believes that it was real in the beginning. Somebody found something and then did all this to cover his tracks.
Well, that still doesn't explain the real signals. And we've got Australia with an incredible real signal.
It is a whopper.
The reason I'm so intrigued with Australia, let me get to this point. All right, we have these three data points. We have Guernsey. Remember the astronomer in Guernsey?
Sure.
The amateur.
Sure.
We have the amateur astronomer in Japan.
Yep.
Oka.
And we also have had screen dumps from that.
Yes. And, well, we still do, because we found that the GeoCities site was saved by AOL. And except for the last couple of posts last night, the whole site has been reconstructed over on AOL.
You're kidding.
And there is a link through Enterprise and through your site.
Really?
Keith has been... Hey, come on. Scotty's good.
Yes, he is. But I wonder how long it'll be before the NSA logo goes up there.
That's what we're going to find out, aren't we? By the way, we stuck the NSA logo over on Enterprise in our update tonight just to see if they want to come and take it down.
They will.
We'll see.
Well, ask Scotty about the FBI.
We will see.
And the NSA is probably meaner than the FBI.
We will see.
We'll see. All right.
Anyway, all right. The reason we got excited is because we've got some real radio engineers. There's a gentleman tonight in Los Angeles who has been in this field for probably 30, 40 years, who is building a system with antenna and feed horns and all that so Enterprise can do its own confirmation. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep his name held back for the time being until he's got something, and then we'll put him on the air and we'll let everybody see the data on the web. All right.
Sure.
He knows what he's doing. He's forgotten more about radio than most of these young guys know at the moment. He is very intrigued with the plot, the trend curve that I was on Friday night, which is if you assume this thing is not at the star, but is traveling, a probe coming toward us,
mm-hmm.
and you assume that it's meant to attract attention at the rest frequency of hydrogen, which is 1420, then the 1453 we originally got reported has got to be a blue-shifted, on-rushing tone, like a train coming toward you with a whistle on.
Right.
If it's slowing down, that frequency has to drop by a certain predicted amount every single night, producing a curve. These three observations are, this is what's so exciting in real science, these three data points from Guernsey, Japan, and Australia fit that curve beautifully. And it comes to zero the first week in December, around December 7th on this plot, which is the date that our Pentagon guys have been telling us something's going to land north of Phoenix. Now, you put this together. This is real data, good sourcing from intelligence sources. You got this hoax over here. It looks like a smokescreen. It looks like designed to get everybody to say, ah, they're crying wolf and go away and not pay attention until it's too late to mess up the plan.
All right, one more before the top of the hour. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Where are you?
My name is John. I'm calling from New York City, Art.
Hello, John.
And I could confirm this from a different slant. There's an astronomer in New Jersey. His name is Bill Donahue. He has a website called HiddenMeanings.com where he's been following this Pegasus for about a good year now.
A year?
A year?
Listen, but see, I have to ask you gentlemen to stretch, even you guys, because this is quite a stretch for even me. He's an astronomer, but he uses the Bible as an astrological interpretation of the universe. And he has a show on Manhattan Cable, and I just turned it on once by a freak. And he went on that the Book of Revelations, the end coming, the first horse of the apocalypse, is the white horse, whose constellation equivalent in the sky is Pegasus.
That's not a stretch at all, sir.
All right. Now, if I could bring this up a little farther. Now, he believes that the Bible, the second coming, this individual will come from this galaxy. Now, if the government received the signal, has decoded it like you said, the dark side, who doesn't want to lose the power structure, says, hey, we already have this technology where we could send somebody up and come back down to beat the individual who's coming from Pegasus. This way we can ensure our power structure. And if you go on to read the Bible, now I was raised Catholic, but as a New Yorker, I just left it all behind. It says that the Antichrist that comes serves the beast, and the beast has seven heads. Now, if you look at G7, it's the seven richest Western powers. They would be the ones who had an interest in starting this hoax to get everybody to look away while they send their men up to come down. Now, you can go to his website, and he has more or less, you have the scientific side, and he has the spiritual side.
I hear you. All right. What is the website again?
The website is www.com. www.hiddenmeanings.com.
Hiddenmeanings.com.
Keep it up now. You'll see he has Pegasus up there. His name is Bill Donahue, and he runs a church dealing with this in Fork River, New Jersey. You could subscribe to his newsletter.
Enough already.
Yeah.
Richard, any comments on
all of
this?
Well, the comments are that a lot of people are looking at these turbulent times, and they're seeing portents and signs, and we have sacred documents that make certain predictions. I have been saying for some time, as we have decoded this Egyptian mythos in a place where it has no business being at all, in the most sacrosanct scientific agency we think we've got, NASA, that there are an elite group who are basically attempting to either follow or make come true what I've been calling the Armageddon script.
That's
based
it.
On the ancient Egyptian, which was then updated in the Christian tradition in Revelations.
Or put another way, what this man says fits in.
It fits in beautifully. Now, it doesn't mean it's true. It simply means there's a perceptual belief by a few in key places who want to make it true. That's a big difference. And if they have the technology and power, and the most important power they have is secrecy and disbelief, it is a reasonable scenario. You know, we're talking about agencies now.
Okay, well, unless I misheard what the man said, and he's still here.
I'm still here.
I don't think I did. He said the same thing. That essentially exactly what you said.
Yeah, we're not far apart. And I'm saying that these commercials running are telegraphed from people who are more in the know than we are, and are telling others that are in the know, get ready.
All right.
Horse as a symbol of death is a very powerful symbol, Art. That's what makes me very uncomfortable about a lot of this story.
Caller, thank you. We'll get a link up to that site.
Thank you.
All right, from New York City. Richard, New York City, Richard's Manhattan, Richard's old home. Do you miss it, Richard?
Nope.
No.
I love the higher desert.
Yeah, you're way up there. All right, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. We'll break here. And again, all phone lines are being restricted to people who have information on this particular subject. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
I always love that phasing. Good morning, everybody. Richard C. Hoagland is here, and we are discussing the Pegasus situation. Is that the right way to phrase it? Or phase it? I don't know. We'll get back to it in a moment. And we are taking calls, only calls that relate specifically to this. If you have information or a significant comment on this, we want to hear it. And we will be laying more heavily into the phones as we move along. So, as the old saying goes, don't touch that dime. Right, as we try to unravel this very interesting story, hoax or whatever it is, cover. Here's a pretty good question for you, Richard. It says, Art and Richard, I'm having a terrible problem understanding the nature of the EQ Pegasi signal. Is it just a carrier wave, or is it ones and zeros? Is it modulated? Is the signal a code? Does it say anything, or is it just a noise pulse? Help, I'm going nuts, Bill in San Diego.
Okay, according to the engineering I looked at, it appears to be just a carrier wave. In other words, just a signal. There's no information on it. Now, there's a body of literature about how you deal with a thing like this. And for many years, in this literature, which is now 30 years old since Morrison and Cocconi's first paper in Nature back in 1959, and then Frank Drake's Project OSMA at Green Bank at the radio telescope, an 85-foot dish, where in 1961, I believe, they listened to a few stars for signals.
Yes.
The idea would be that if somebody out there was trying to get our attention, you broadcast a very simple but powerful signal at one frequency.
Right.
And then you basically send the information at another frequency.
Yeah, actually, you know, SETI, Seth, for example, confirmed that. I mean, he said that is the premise under which we operate, that there would be a central, very strong thump-thump kind of signal.
Yeah, you know, a beacon frequency, it was called.
That's right.
And it would be around the interstellar song of hydrogen. The universe is mostly hydrogen. Hydrogen, when left to its own devices in interstellar space, undergoes a transition called the of a electron flip, which generates a little pulse of energy at 21 centimeters wavelength, or 1440 megahertz, 1,420 million cycles per second.
Right.
If it's at rest. Now, if it's moving, it's Doppler shifted. And you have clouds of hydrogen, and they're going up in frequency, and other clouds going down in frequency, and you have hydrogen being swirled around, forming stars and all that. Well, on this background sea of natural radio emission, noise, the thought has been that any ETs out there, or someday ourselves if we ever get up the gumption to transmit and not just listen, we would send, or they would send, a message, a beacon, a call on this common kind of universal frequency.
And so you would expect to find it about where it has been found.
At 1420, but the signal we're seeing is not at 1420, it's up at 1450 and change.
Yeah, but that's so close.
It's close, which is what gave me the idea, wait a minute, suppose it's a blue-shifted, Doppler-shifted, up frequency because the source is approaching us. By using that premise on Friday night on the air in real time, I calculated a rough amount by which that signal had to be moving toward us in a ship, in a probe, in a spacecraft of some kind, if the rest frequency would be 1420. And that turned out to be about 2% the speed of light, or about 4,000 miles per second. And I then said, it has to slow down. If it's going to get here, if it's going to stop and visit, it can't just sail through like Rama, which was the ship in one of Arthur Clarke's novels, Rendezvous with Rama. It has to slow down. If it slows down, the frequency will have to fall, indicating the velocity is being bled off somehow, and that should be reflected in radio receivers tuning lower and lower to see the same signal. And lo and behold, aren't that exactly what we've been seeing?
Indeed. All right, here's a fax from Matt, and I think this tracks with what you're saying. You tell me. Art, I've been following the EQ PEGSci signal coverage over the last week or so, and I have a couple of comments about the recent Australian verification. One, the Australian site did pick up a signal very close in frequency and direction to the Dora signal. The Aussie signal was a little off direction, though, not exactly at EQ PEGSci. This seems to indicate that the signal is coming from somewhere between here and EQ PEGSci. It seems to me that someone very good in geometry ought to be able to use triangulation to pinpoint the exact location of the transmission's origin based on the exact antenna angles where they picked up the signals and the positions of the antennas. Two, the Aussie signal had a slightly lower frequency, meaning to me that the transmitter is decelerating towards us. Sign Matt.
Matt, go to the head of the class. You got it. Now, see, what I find so astonishing, Art, is that here's a guy, I mean, we don't know his background, his education, whatever, he's figured it out. The guys in Australia who are PhDs, tenured, you know, they're basically on the government paper.
Stay good and close to the phone for me.
They couldn't figure it out? They couldn't understand that if you're dealing with a beacon on a spacecraft and it's moving, it will move in the sky and it will change in frequency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Matt, whose credentials we don't know, can think better than the professionals at one of the world's biggest radio telescope facilities? Come on, boys and girls, which one are you going to believe? I think we're being conned by the pros, because if it is real, imagine what we're in shock for, in store for. Project Samson, the pillars being pulled down, the paradigm changes, E.T. finally shows up. I mean, can you imagine? This is a movie unplaying itself in real time, with all of the extraneous noise and hoopla and breastfeeding, and some people, it's not invented here, and so they're not going to sign on until it's overwhelming. This is soap opera, real-life scientific soap opera. Now, what we're going to do is put together our receiver and our antennas, and we're going to start to listen probably in the next couple of days. I think our folks will be ready.
I'm ready. I'm almost there myself, Richard. I've got a 3.8-meter dish, not big, but it's a big signal. And I have it's on an equatorial mount, unfortunately. I don't have azimuth elevation, but I'm
now
getting...
You're in a good position because you're in that valley surrounded by mountains.
And I've got a receiver that'll cover the frequency in question.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm so close, Richard. All I need is the right LNA out there, and I'm getting close. If this keeps going, I'm going to go out there and mount an LNA.
All right. What we're going to do is publish on the web the next day or so, maybe tonight if my guys can get it ready, the graph showing the plot of decreasing frequency with time. Because if you're listening at 1453, you're not going to hear it. Now, what I find fascinating is that the SETI League folks and Seth Sostek's people and even the folks in Australia, they're listening at EQ PEG as if it can only be there. They have a narrow beam for their telescope, meaning it's like looking through a high-powered telescope where you only see a small part of the sky.
Sure.
They don't see it because, A, they're physically not looking now in the right direction. It's moved a bit. And they don't hear it because they're listening at the wrong frequency, like trying to listen to you on KOB here in Albuquerque by listening to TOP in Washington.
Wouldn't work. All right, listen, we've got a lot of people.
This is Study 101.
I've got you. A lot of people on the phones. Let's intersperse this. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. My name is Steve. I'm calling from Montreal, Canada.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Art. I'm very glad to have you back. I discovered you about 10 days before you left, and I was crestfallen. I thought this is the best thing since sliced bread, and then you disappeared on us. I'm really glad to have you back. I'm a professional translator. I heard your appeal for somebody who could maybe translate the...
Oh, you might well speak French, I guess, eh?
I might well, sir. The report is that the signals from EQ Pegasi is divided into three parts. The first is an introductory piece of journalism, giving the outline of the story, what occurred, and so on. The second is a statement from Dr. Paul Souk, I guess, and he's panning the whole thing.
He's the Study League president in New Jersey.
Yeah, he's been on, I've got the story here in which he says it's virtually set SETI back 100 years,
yeah.
Which is a little bit of an exaggeration.
And the third part is the gentleman himself, Richard Doerr, who was explaining why he stepped down and didn't conduct the press conference. So I don't know if any of it's of any use to you, but I can do a site translation as we go.
That's it then, huh?
Yeah.
So that's what the French have up. All right, I just wanted to ensure that it was not yet another report of signal reception, and you have told us that.
It is not.
Bless your heart. Figures we'd get that from Montreal. Very good. Richard, here's another fax. You'll like this one or not. First of all, about me, I'm a former counterintelligence agent, police chief, deputy sheriff. For me, based on past experience, Doerr's final statement is a cover story, disinformation, psyops, just plain fake. Most likely, Doerr doesn't know this. He is a pawn. What does bother me is his reference to Project 415. The spooks visit him for 2 hours. Rather long meetings, just tell someone to shut up. Seems more like an investigatory meeting to me. The spooks most likely spoon-fed or force-fed Project 415 to Doerr, so it would be known to the public. He says, in short, intel people meet Doerr and tell him of 415. Doerr tells Project 415. Project 415 gets worldwide broadcast. The project can be referenced by the general public. 415 is believed. People close their eyes.
I think you're onto something, and let me give you a corollary. I went to the website tonight. Steve Bassett called and said I should really read this thing before we went on the air. He kind of agrees with that factor. He says there's kind of like a wheel within a wheel here. But part of the agenda was to get exposure for 415. Let me tell you what 415 turns out to be. It turns out to be a very complicated, very expensive, very elaborate, satellite-based, eavesdropping electronic system to tap a billion telephone calls a week in Great Britain alone.
Mm-hmm.
And extend it to the United States. In fact, the project is UK-USA. Sponsored by the National Security Agency. Big Brother is not only watching and listening, but is capable of looking at a lot of traffic it cannot now because it doesn't have the computers or the signal processors or whatever. And it was been totally not on the radar screen until Doerr mentioned it in his web post. If the agency, if we go back to the NSA, we have the constitutionalists and we have the rogue groups, and the rogue groups basically are demanding more and more power and more lack of secrecy. I mean, what has this whole thing with Clinton been about? It's been about you don't have a private life anymore. The assault on you, Art, when you took time off to handle your personal problem. You do not have a right to have a private life, okay?
Right.
So the way you put teeth into it is you eavesdrop everything and everybody. And this project, 415, has the technical capability of pressed far enough to literally eavesdrop on every damn telephone call everybody ever makes from now on.
So the 415 reference is absolutely real.
Absolutely real. But let me lay out another scenario.
All right.
Suppose that the Doerr business and the ET signal and all that became a convenient mechanism where the good guys in the agency wanted us to find out about 415 and how overwhelmingly threatening that is as part of this creeping constitutional destruction. And they use the whole Pegasus scenario as an excuse to get the word out on 415. And that's why that NSA logo is up there. It's to keep the story going.
Well, all I know is, and again, I'll say this, as a simple little April Fool's fun joke, we put up an FBI logo, Keith did actually, on our website, and man, the feds were all over us like flies on horse poop, and we had to take that down right away. Is that NSA logo still up there now?
It's still there. You go to my bookmarks and just check.
Yeah, let's check with someone else while we're doing that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, John.
John, yes, how can we help you?
Yeah, I was checking, like you were mentioning, I was checking whether what he was saying in his article there with the press conference being canceled, whether some of his information was correct. And in an article in the New Statesman of August 12th, 1988, as their cover story, Somebody Listening, as you've already mentioned, it says Project 415, a top secret new global surveillance system, can tap a billion calls in a year in the UK alone.
Everybody's confirming this then.
Yeah, no, this is actually linked on a site. I'm looking at it now. So what is Project 415? He's right. It was in the May Daily Telegraph reference. There's a April 1998 reference. There is, let me go down to the bottom of this. The original story appeared in the New Statesman, all right? And there's extensive references. This is a real project.
Right.
And I believe this was dated 12th of August, 1988. You're right. That was during the Bush administration.
He also mentions where the people are coming from, like the GCHQ, the Government Communications, and NSA.
Yep. That's,
and in there, it
British,
also states...
headquarters for this project.
Yeah, right. It states that this monitoring stations are the Government Communications HQ at Cheltenham and the NSA.
See, one of the problems with the interpretation that a satellite... that door, if we take him to be real, tapped into, was a Project 415 eavesdropping satellite. I mean, by definition, if you're eavesdropping, you're not transmitting. You're listening, right?
Yeah, you know.
You're not going to transmit on a transmitter that's falling in frequency by one full megahertz per day.
If you were going to be eavesdropping, I'm trying to suddenly in my mind put together a way to imagine a satellite making a transmission on the frequency that we're talking about that is related in some way to an eavesdropping program.
Well, obviously, if you're listening, you've got to transmit the data down to Earth to some central point, right?
Yes, sir.
All right.
But you can do that from a geosynchronous a point. You don't need to go billions of miles out.
Oh, right. No. Well, I mean, the inference here is that we're looking at geosynchronous satellites and that they just happen to be in the beam of the telescope. The problem with that is that if they're in geosynchronous orbit, there is no relative motion, basically, between the ground station, the antenna, and the satellite. So there's no Doppler shift. And you certainly wouldn't get a frequency change of 1 million hertz between one day and the next.
No, that's absolutely correct. And it wouldn't just be a slamming carrier up there either.
And you wouldn't get correlative data where you put together an amateur in Guernsey, an amateur in Japan, professional team in Australia, and it gives you a nice straight line plot like we have.
All right.
But it is a nice excuse to get the public looking at 415, and I think that those guys are piggybacking on this story to get the word out that, I mean, listening is listening. The other part of this, and we're symbolic now, is if you're flagging attention to a listening program to eavesdrop on Earth, on U.S. citizens, you turn it around, the code here is, yes, we're listening to the signal. In other words, they didn't pick any old satellite, they picked this incredible eavesdropping system. So what does that tell us? We're eavesdropping officially on this signal. Pay attention. With a logo up there still as of 10 seconds ago.
It is up there. Now, that's absolutely astounding. I really almost ought to bring Keith on to tell you what we went through with the FBI and how quickly, by the way, we went through it. And I say again, the NSA, if anything, is spookier and meaner than the FBI. I don't mean that in any derogatory manner for the FBI, but I mean, they're pretty bad. They're a pretty bad group. So hold on, Richard. We'll get back to you in a moment. Now, the story of what happened when we just played a simple little fun April Fool's joke is perhaps relevant to what's going on right now and still going on this GeoCities site. This is really interesting. Whatever it is, it's interesting. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. All right, back now to Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, you're back on the air again. We've got a lot of people on the phone here.
Okay.
And I don't know where it's going to take us, but you never know with phones. Let's see what we've got. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland. Hi.
Hi, this is Brent in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yes, sir.
A point that I would like to make, when Mr. Doar made the retraction statement yesterday, I believe it was.
That's correct. It was yesterday, right,
yep.
Richard?
Yes.
Yeah.
You made the comment that possibly he had put a few phrases in there to tell us something. As he referred to being depressed and that it must be the weather and
yes.
things of that sort. I believe Project 415 is probably being fed to us to take us off the beaten track, you know, to get us off of where we're supposed to be looking. And the reason why I say that, if you add the numbers together, 4, 1, and 5, you come up with 10. If you add the numbers 12 and 7, the proposed arrival date, 1, 2, and 7 equals 10. 10 being positive, as in it being a true statement. Must be the weather, I believe, is that it's a stormy or sad day, or possibly himself because he can no longer pursue this, or for mankind as some type of warning. I believe the pressure from the NSA has caused him to put out the statement just to draw us away from the facts.
Well, that's, I guess, equally possible. Look, I want, if you go to my website right now, in the links section of my website, you will, the top item you will see, you've got to click on links, is the FBI letter that we received when we just... And actually, we didn't fully even use the FBI seal. We received the following letter. On April 1st, 1997, an altered news release depicting the official seal of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, had been downloaded and altered to appear on the Art Bell website as an April Fool's joke. Your name, Myron McLeod, appears as the administrative contact for the Art Bell website. And they wrote it to him. Please be aware that, regardless of intention or the appearance of a disclaimer, misuse of the FBI name and or seal without notification of the FBI is punishable by law. Although the aforementioned joke can no longer be reached via the home page, it is accessible at blah, 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 and should be removed immediately to avoid further contact from the FBI. The U.S. Attorney's Office, San Diego, has also been apprised of this matter. Sincerely, blah, blah. That's the letter we got for our little April Fool's joke, and still at this hour, the NSA seal remains at the GeoCities site. Doesn't make sense to me. How about you, Richard?
No, it doesn't. And the reference by the caller to stormy weather, I think is very right on. When this story developed, the whole thing regarding signals from Pegasus, and were they real or were they a hoax, and possible confirmations and all that, my attention was actually focused a bit elsewhere. Mike Barra, who was a former engineer with Boeing, friend of Ken Johnston, who came to this project a couple years ago, has been doing really phenomenal research, doing the kind of digging that I don't have time to do, because even though I love the science, I'm so strung out on the politics and the other parts of this, you know, more and more of my time gets taken up with things that I should not have to look at. Mike has done an extraordinary job of extending this Egyptian ritual in NASA, looking at date after date and landing and arrival and close encounter and flyby after flyby, and has put together an astonishing database that overwhelmingly is convincing of this Egyptian Masonic ritual pattern inside NASA that extends from the earliest Mercury flights to the moon flights, to the Gemini flights, to the unmanned missions to the outer solar system. Do you know, Art, tonight we have spacecraft that are headed for Sirius that were deliberately deflected in their last flight past Neptune so they would fly toward the star Sirius, which compromised the science at Neptune because you can't have it both ways?
No.
And on and on and on.
I mean,
there is
a
huge volume of material, and Mike and I are threatening that we're going to do for the Egyptian ritual stuff what I've done for the hyperdimensional model. Remember how many years I came on your show and we talked about hyperdimensional physics?
Of course.
And finally, I, you know, sat down and applied pen to paper, in this case, you know, mouse to computer, and ultimately came up with something which has been pretty damn convincing in many, many quarters. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, mathematicians have been emailing me saying there's a lot to this, yes.
Okay, we are going to have to do the same thing for the Egyptian ritual NASA model. Lay it out in quadruplicate with example after example after example. We have done a kind of a partial version of that in this website posting on Enterprise we put up a couple nights ago, you know, what if a phone call comes from Pegasus? Because what we really started looking at was not Pegasus. Before that, Brooke, we were looking at SOHO and the sun and the rather mysterious and bizarre events around the disappearance of the SOHO spacecraft. Because it's looking more and more like SOHO was deliberately murdered and then brought back to life. And this is evident from many particular, you know, convergent lines of data, not the least of which is there is a post on the official NASA SOHO website saying they killed SOHO. It's a cartoon. And it's from South Park, one of your favorite shows, Art.
Oh, my God, they killed Kenny.
And in place of Kenny, they've got SOHO. And in the back row, you know, they got all of the characters of this, of the show, and I don't watch it, so, you know. In the back row, they have two gray aliens standing there.
Richard, you've got to watch it. You've got to check out South Park. It's great.
Well, now that I've been intrigued, I certainly will.
Okay.
The point is that a friend of mine, you know, came to us in the Seattle conference and slipped me a piece of paper and said that she had found on the official SOHO website in a hidden file this cartoon prepared by the webmaster. They killed SOHO.
Oh, my God, they killed SOHO.
Oh, my God. Like, you know, they, that's why the title of the piece.
Uh-huh.
And what Mike did was to go through this step by step and piece by piece and data point by data point, and we put this together, and then this Pegasus thing broke. Well, the problem is, what was SOHO looking at when it was mysteriously taken out? The story itself from NASA doesn't hold water. I mean, all the things that went wrong with that spacecraft, the wrong computer commands, the wrong files loaded.
Right.
It turns out it was killed at a key particular point in terms of where it was looking, which is the torrid meteor stream behind the sun on June 24th, when it mysteriously died. It was brought back to life when the sun moves mythologically into another one of these ritual positions in the sky. It's like clockwork. You can set your watch by this stuff. Now, I don't agree with it. I don't believe it, meaning I don't subscribe to the ritual. But you don't have to be a Roman Catholic or, you know, a Buddhist to know that people practice religious rituals. This is an ancient Egyptian religious ritual, Art, and it involves death and resurrection. Remember your comment about Phoenix? You got to have ashes before you can rise from the ashes.
Correct.
The horse symbol in ancient Celtic mythology, stretching back through to Egypt, signifies death. It's the carrying of the soul to transcendence. The very troubling part about this is this persistent image of death on television in these commercials, simultaneous with suddenly a call from the unknown, a cry across the stellar distances of something coming to pay a call, just as we are entering the middle of the torrid meteor stream, which we're in now. And on Friday, there appears to be a possibility, just want to phrase this carefully, that a chunk of something in that damn stream, a la Graham Hancock and his latest book, remember Graham and his intense preoccupation with the torrid meteor showers?
Yes.
The two catch points where we could get hit by something that's very unpleasant are between now and the 15th of November, peaking somewhere around the 6th, which is Friday night, and then between June 24th and August, early August. And early August, June, August 1999, of course, is the period in the sky of the orbit where SOHO was looking when it was taken out.
All right, Richard, hold tight for a moment. Let's get a couple more calls in here. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland. Hi.
Richard, I think you're absolutely correct, because out of chaos, order. And that's been the theme in this death-centered advertising that they've been doing. I have a few questions, if I could just beg your patience on it and maybe connect the dots. As John Glenn goes up and circles the Earth, do you remember when George Bush parachuted out of an airplane?
Absolutely.
With the Golden Knights?
Do you know where he parachuted from?
The Yuma Proving Grounds. And you know where that is? That's 33 degrees where he landed.
Yes.
Okay. And
now,
did you have...
Let me stop you there, sir.
Pardon me?
I did redshift on George jumping out of that airplane.
Yes, sir.
All right?
Yes, sir.
When he touched ground, Osiris, Orion, the father of Horus...
Yes.
...just clearing the eastern horizon at that latitude and longitude.
That's beautiful, because you know what? Did you see on... I was watching World News Tonight... I think it was either 10th, I'm looking at my notes, October 31st or November 1st was a few days ago, John Glenn orbiting over the Earth, and they showed him in the shuttlecraft orbiting over the Earth, and he was, guess where, above Egypt. And I was just kind of wondering.
Oh, I saw that too.
Oh,
yeah,
they've done it over
and
over
wondering where Cyrus was there.
Yeah, they played that again and again and again. Richard,
remember I was on the phone with you, Art?
Yeah, and you said, oh my God, they're showing the pyramids. I remember that, yes.
Yes.
And then later, I was fortunate to catch it because they did it again and again.
Okay, here's where things get very intriguing. John Glenn is a 33rd degree Mason.
Is right? He?
He is in his 36th year since his first flight. I was a little bit younger back during his first flight, so I didn't, you know all the things that we know now. But Mike has figured out with Redshift that at 9:47 on the morning of February 20th, when Glenn was launched on his Atlas Mercury booster into his three-orbit period, his leap into history.
Right.
If you've been standing at Cape Canaveral, all right, Comet Encke, which is the central body in the Taurid meteor stream, the one that everyone is looking at, would have been precisely 33 degrees above the launch pad horizon. Comet Encke, when he launched the other afternoon, was exactly on the eastern horizon, just clearing the horizon when that shuttle left the ground. Coincidence after coincidence after coincidence.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bellheim.
Hello. Are you there?
We are here.
Hi, my name is Jim, and I'm calling from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yes, sir.
I'm from Houston, Texas, though, and I work for a major airline. I used to work for one based in Houston. When they went bankrupt, I found my way up here. Let's see, I've got so much to tell you. The carrier that I work for now, we have the most service out of Indianapolis. In the last decade or so, we have two Air Force bases up here, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton and Grissom Air Force Base here in northern Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
We would get all this, we did some charter work for the United States Air Force and the military out of Washington, D.C. and Houston, Texas, NASA, places like this. So I, being in customer service, I got to be familiar with a lot of the faces that would come and go. Well, since they closed Grissom Air Force Base down, we've seen less and less of that traffic over the years. But I can tell you that within the last week, Grissom Air Force Base has come alive once again. And a lot of the old faces that I used to see in the past, I've reacquainted myself with, just, you know, because I'm still in customer service. So some of the old faces, you're going to really, this is going to give you a twinkle. I said, what's up, guys? And they said, oh, twinkle, twinkle, little star. And I asked the one guy, I said, does this have anything to do with the signal from outer space, you know, from the Pegasus system? They looked at each other and looked at me and smiled, and they said, the high desert strikes again.
All right. So I said, what's up, guys? And they said, oh, the same old, same old. And I says, no. You know, hey, it might have been born at night, but not last night. This is much too much traffic in and out of here. And they said, well, we got some big problems to deal with and not too much time to do it in. And I said, is it the Klingons or the Romulans? And they looked at each other and they said, well, we're hoping it's the Federation. And they're coming quick.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Now, Richard, I've heard you say this 1,000 times over the broadcast. You've said that there's been turmoil within NASA for the longest time. Power structures, you know, and power fights and everything. Well, coming from Houston, my best friend is a 25-year, he and his wife are 25-year employees of NASA, and they were from Austin, Texas. They both worked for Motorola and subsequently ended up down in NASA working as civilian employees having something to do with the computer end of it. So they're my best friends. I talk to them, you know, on the watch line, you might say, free all the time. And we keep up. And over the years, we've always had some wonderful, wonderful conversations about some things that would just raise your hair that you don't normally get to talk to people about, you know, when you're standing in line at Safeway.
We're very short on time now.
Okay, I asked him the last time. I said, what's going up? And he says, everybody's head's fixing to roll down here. And I said, why? And he says, well, he said, turmoil, this president that we've got in the White House now is not going to go down in history as being the most scandalous president in the 20th century. He's going to go down in history as being the president that blew the whistle, that told the world the truth.
Well, he may yet. We'll see. My only comment on the whole election, Richard, was I thought Monica Lewinsky won. And that's really not very far off course either. I mean, really, the big deal made over Lewinsky, I think, accounts for the Democrats' victory, or so-called victory, and they did have a bit of a victory in an off-year election. It's almost unprecedented, and the only factor that really is at work, other than the good economy and so forth and so on, is the big deal made over Monica Lewinsky. And now all of a sudden, I noticed that the impeachment hearings are going to be quick and over by Thanksgiving, I'm told. They were going to drag out forever before. So, you know, you want to do one more hour?
Yes.
All right, we'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM.
With Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
That would be me. And listen, if you want to see one of the most beautiful images of Pegasus, the mythological Pegasus, boy, somebody sent me a graphic that is just absolutely outstanding. Go to my website, click on the links page, and it'll be the first one there. It's absolutely outstanding. You might even want to save it as wallpaper or something for your computer. It really is astoundingly good. And Richard, are you there?
I am here.
All right. I'm going through my email, and look what I came up with. It says, Art, I was checking up on the latest information on the live information given from the Australian scopes. The current status of each scope, disabled. All six of the scopes have been shut down. Thought you ought to know.
Yep. I checked that earlier myself. I forgot to mention it. He's right.
Why would that be?
Because they're looking, and they don't want anyone to know they're looking. Look, we have to follow two roads here. Either we're looking at PhDs who spend a great deal of time and money getting doctorates and getting tenure and doing very cutting-edge things the rest of us would like to do and get paid for.
Right.
And they turn out to be the dumbest turkeys on the planet. They miss it. All right? Or they're a little bit deceptive. They're not being honest with us on the planet. And while they're telling us one thing, they're actually looking and doing what the science demands they do, which is when you see a wow signal, you go wow, and you go chase it. I mean, go back to what I said several hours ago. If you look at what I posted last night in the wee hours of the morning, they spent all of 10 seconds, Art, downloading that signal. 10 seconds. And then they did nothing more. They didn't go check the NORAD index. They didn't go check what satellites were available. They didn't go check. They didn't check anything.
I agree. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, at some point, us sea people, with the sea in the middle of our name, really have got to say, look, folks, which is more unbelievable? That the world is surrounded by stupidity and dumbness and idiocy, or we're being conned? Because I look at the world and I see a world that kind of most of the time works, where most people are not dying because people are doing dumb, stupid things, like flying airplanes on marijuana and, you know, stuff like that. In other words, if you were to believe the skeptics, and I'm using that as a religious term, every possible thing that happens that we don't like is just happened. Darn, just dumb luck. Whereas if you follow the logic of human relations and, you know, sociology, things happen, as Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, in politics, there are no accidents. Things happen because someone plans for them to happen. And we have had a drumbeat for the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years in the so-called ET UFO area,
mm-hmm.
where every time something bizarre happens, oh, just coincidence. Oh, just a lone gunman. Ah, just a mad bomber. Mm-hmm. Oh, nobody plans anything. Now, the rest of the world is planned. You got up this morning and you had a plan for the day.
I sure did.
You have a list of commercials, you have affiliates, you go through a day, and I do too, and most professional people do, with plans in your life. You're planning for the weekend, you plan for vacation, you plan for your kids' college, you plan for insurance. We see all these things happen, and oh, it just happened.
No, it's true. I have one of the most structured lives in the universe, and so you're right when you say that. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. Where are you?
I'm in Denver, Colorado. We listen on KHOW, 630 on the AM dial.
Yes, sir.
I'm a layman, but I'm a hieroglyphics encoder by hobby and passion, and I've been doing it for 11 years now. And I've discovered something really remarkable that seems to be fitting with this Pegasus thing. I've broken a code, a hieroglyphics code. And it has its roots in the figure 666, and I'm not...
Why am I not surprised?
What hieroglyphic code have you broken? Where did you...
Somebody is communicating in plain sight in our signs and in our in street signs, in corporate logos, in our books even, around us, and we're just not picking up on it. The key to the whole thing is that figure 666 in Revelations, and I'm not disputing anything in the Bible. I'm just I'm looking at this from a different point of view. It is the way it is, and that's the way it is. It would help if I could show you. If you take a pencil and a piece of paper and draw the figure 666 with a magic marker, make it great big, and make it so that all three zeros of the sixes are touching each other. And then underline that with a heavy underline. Then take it and rotate it up to the right, stand it up. So what you have is an E, a stylized E. And the hieroglyphic 666 is actually E lying, as in lying on its back or lying through its teeth.
Hmm.
And this insignia has been photographed on some of the... I think it was Billy Myers who's photographed a lot of the flying discs. The variation on this hieroglyphic is the capital E if you draw just a regular capital E and then a mirror image of it.
All right. You know, I think the best way to handle this would be to have you send a visual image to Richard by fax. Richard,
fax to our website, which is 505-771-0820.
It's a little difficult to visualize and to put into words and have everybody convert that in their brains. So if you would send the visual, and if it makes sense, we're glad to get it up for you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Phyllis in Alexandria, Virginia.
Hello, Phyllis.
I'm not sure that this, and I listen to you on business radio out of Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that this is any significance, but Alexandria city government and NASA share one of the cable channels. And for the last month, we can watch NASA from 8 o'clock until the wee hours of the morning. And that's what I've been doing. But tonight, NASA's not on, which I think is sort of weird. They show, they show the Earth, and they put up STS number, whatever it is that they're showing.
Sure.
And
I have it here on satellite.
Right.
Okay.
But they're not showing it in this area. But you have it in your area?
Well, I haven't been able to look because I'm frankly tuned on cable to Art Show, and I'm taping.
Right. But I just sort of, I didn't know whether that was significant or not, but it just struck me as sort of odd. And they've been, replaying conversations with John Glenn and the other astronauts.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So in other words, she's saying, Richard, that she's still seeing the feed, but the feed is not feeding live stuff.
Well, normally when they're not doing, you mean live from Houston?
Or from the spacecraft.
Well, that's what I mean. Normally you have either a view from the shuttle inside cameras, or you have outside views, or you will most of the time be sitting when the shuttle is between TDRS downlinks. They have a kind of a static shot of the control center at Houston, the mission control center.
Exactly.
With those blue consoles, that horrible blue. I mean, their designer really should go back to school.
All right, but I think what she's saying is that they've gone into replays and you're not getting any kind of live anything. We'll have to check that out.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
We'll do that in the next break.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Richard, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, you're going to like this. I stumbled upon the newspaper account a couple of days ago, astronomical in nature, and what it is that the Russians have launched a spacecraft which is going to deploy next month an object in space. And the experiment was derided by our astronomers. And specifically what it is, it's about a 100-meter aluminized mylar mirror.
Oh, this is the mirror reflector.
Yeah, okay. It's up there. It's up there now. It's already been launched.
Oh, exactly. So now what's interesting about this, it's supposed to pass in a quasi-polar orbit around early next month from, and it will be visible in the United States on a path from the northeast to the southwest, and it will go over the Pacific somewhere south of LA early next month. So now what it occurred to me is that if we would want, if indeed there is something there approaching Earth, if indeed it is, let's assume for a moment that there is, and if it's coming at, as you say, about 2% C, what if it's coming on a light sail, which right now, to decelerate, will be turned around Earth, around the sun, that is. So if it's coming on a light sail, it will be very, very much visible because it will reflect the sunlight.
The problem is that it's moving too fast, this close to the sun, to be stopped by the faint pressure of solar radiation. That's an excellent idea, but the numbers don't work out, even ballparking it off the top of my head. This is an idea by Robert Forward at the Hughes Research Laboratories of the Hughes Tool Company.
Right.
Who has been involved with very high-tech projects for many years. He has modeled some pretty neat ways of going to the stars using lasers and sunlight and reflectors and solar sails and all that, but they require, thousands of astronomical units to get up to speed, and this thing is too close to slow down with that technology.
Okay. Good answer, I guess. First time caller line. You're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland and Art Bell. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Damon in Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Okay, Damon, you're going to have to yell at us a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm listening to you on KWHN 1320.
Yes, sir.
I have some further information on the coordinates of some objects in the sky over Phoenix on December 7th. And this ties in with several other dates that are of note that we might talk about. But let me tell you this first. At noon on December 7th, if my sky globe is accurate enough to depict this, EQ Pegasi is on the equator, as Richard mentioned.
On the horizon, you mean?
Excuse me?
On the horizon.
Right, right.
Yep.
EPS Cygnus is at 39.2. Oh, and by the way, let me mention that the shafts in the pyramid, the Great Pyramid, are at angles 45, 32 degrees, 28 minutes, 39 and a half degrees, 39 degrees, 26 degrees, 26.3. Now let's look for those numbers. EPS Cygnus is at 39.2 altitude. The star on the bottom of Cygnus, Alba Rayo, 19 hours, 30 minutes, right ascension. Vega, 39 degrees, 20 minutes declination. The galactic center is at altitude 26.4 degrees and declination 26 degrees, 30 minutes. Leo, the star that joins the neck to the shoulder, is at 19 and a half degrees declination. Regulus is on the equator. Betelgeuse, I guess that's the way you pronounce it,
Orion,
45 degrees altitude. Eltanin, 32 degrees azimuth. EPS Draco, 45 degrees altitude and 19 hours, 48 minutes right ascension. So the numbers all seem to add up to numbers that we see in the pyramid. Now, the reason I mention this is I got started looking at the pyramid based on the work of Robert Bovall and Graham Hancock, stating the 10,500 years B.C.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that if we go to 1221, 10,500 B.C., we find Betelgeuse at 39 and a half, Mars at 26 degrees, EQ Pegasi at 19 and a half, the 39 degrees is the galactic equator, the galactic center is at 19 and a half degrees declination, the Milky Way is perpendicular to the equator.
All of this is going a little over my head.
What okay. He's saying, Art, is there is a pattern.
Yes.
And the pattern is fulfilled if you stand north of Phoenix on this noon on December 7th.
All right, we'll be right back. Hold on, everybody.
With Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S. First, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
Since we were talking about Egyptian mythology, I thought this would go well, because it's Lorena McKennett, of course, but it's got a certain Egyptian sound to it, doesn't it? Richard C. Hoagland is my guest, and we'll be right back. All right, back now to Richard C. Hoagland, and as I was saying, this all kind of goes over my head. I sometimes wonder as I listen to it, for both Caller and Richard, whether we're putting things together and coming to a conclusion, or whether it is proper to look at these things and come to the conclusion, if you follow what I'm saying here.
Yeah, and the last caller, obviously, he's looking at relationships and is seeing a pattern. What we've been doing is a little different, all right? Because what you need to do to constrain that logic, to know when you really found a signal as opposed to just projection, is to have an endpoint. The difference between what the previous caller was doing and what we have been doing is that we're looking at actual mission profiles. When you leave the planet Earth, when you send a spacecraft into space, the planets are moving, the Earth is rotating, everything is in motion. To get to a certain place at a certain time, at a certain latitude and longitude,
right,
you have to have a very precise system of celestial mechanics, navigation, rocket power, etc., etc. Everything is timed down to the split second. If you find when you arrive, we have found in looking at these computer plots over and over again, that these ancient sacred Egyptian ritual constellations are in key geometric positions over and over and over and over again ad nauseum, it can't, as Marvin Zarnik says, who was an expert in celestial mechanics at McDonnell Douglas and wrote a paper for this for me, it can't be an accident, can't be an add-on, can't be an afterthought. It has to be the top priority. And the problem is that it's not supposed to be. You know, crew safety or science,
sure,
or getting to,
sure,
a certain position for observations or whatever. But this data is telling us it has to be, by the cruel, cold equations, as Ted Sturgeon once said, of celestial mechanics, it has to be the number one priority. And therein lies the paradox, Art. It can't be, but it is, which means there's a hidden agenda. And when people like Zarnik are shown our data, they go, holy,
smokes,
you know, expletive deleted,
yes,
because they realize they've been had. That what they thought they were doing, what they thought they were working for, the objectives, the goals, the mission profiles, all the plans, are poppycock compared to the absolute bottom equations of getting there at those times for those geometries of those celestial portents.
All right. By the way, Richard, just to get your backup on this, somebody sent us an artist's conception of Pegasus, and it's one of the prettiest graphics I think that I've seen in a very, very long time. Keith has it up on the website now on the front page. It is pretty, isn't it?
You showed it to me a couple of minutes ago. It really is, and we're going to put the same thing on our website, and under it, with a link, is going to be a description of Pegasus, which I drew from a very important mythological archive volume that's about 1,200 pages. This woman, this art anthropologist, has done an incredible job. Her name is Barbara Walker. I want to read you a couple of things from this, because there is such an incredible resonant strain of symbology and mythology, and your resonating with Lauren McKennett, Art, is not accidental. That music is the ancient harbinger of Egypt, and I can prove it. Listen to this. Pegasus, winged horse of Greek myth, symbol of the sacred king's or hero's journey to heaven, an image of death and apotheosis, like the mythic death horses of northern Europe. Pegasus had archaic matriarchal origins. He sprang from the wise blood of the moon goddess Medusa, who embodied the principle of Medha, the Indo-European root for all female wisdom. Remember, Isis, female, is Sirius. Or alternatively, he was the magic horse, Arion, moon creature on high, born of the goddess Demeter and ridden by Heracles in his role of sacred king in Elis. There was an earlier female Pegasus named Aganippe, the mare who destroys mercifully, actually a title of Demeter herself as the destroying lunar nightmare. Pegasus was named for Pegae, water priestesses who tended the sacred spring of Pirion in Corinth. The cult seems to have been rooted in Egypt. The oldest shrine of Osiris at Abydos, circa 2000 BC, centered on a sacred spring called Pega. The Greek Pegae preserved an ancient dying god cult as shown by the myth of Bellerophon, who mounted Pegasus and tried to ride to heaven as though he were an immortal. He failed and fell. Bellerophon's predecessor, mythologized as his father, also failed and was devoured by wild man-eating mares. This was not meant to suggest that human flesh ever became incorporated into equine diet, EQ Pegasi. It meant rather that pre-Hellenic sacred kings were torn in pieces at the close of their reigns by women disguised as mares. Obviously a very patriarchal projection here.
Obviously. My, that's something. All right, well, you're welcome to that graphic, and it certainly will fit in just right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland.
Yes, Richard, first, could you tell me if the star Sirius is in the Pegasus system?
No, Sirius is in Canis Major, but it is linked mythologically. The whole panoply of constellations, I mean, my background is astronomy, and I've been teaching, you know, in planetaria and in other places for decades.
Okay,
and what they teach us is that the constellations are supposed to look like some kind of figure. That's not true. The constellations turn out to be devices to tell a story. And the story is this vast tapestry, this panorama of mythology, which has the human consciousness somehow and history embedded within it, that tells a story over and over again in these various characters that are depicted by the stars in the night sky.
Okay.
And the concept of a winged horse, imagine this, isn't it incredibly coincidental that there should be a spacecraft, if that's what it turns out to be, coming out of Pegasus, a flying horse whose destiny is to take sacred kings to heaven, and this could be a spaceship destined to take someone to heaven if and when it arrives. It's just too perfect if it's real.
Okay. Have you ever heard of a book called The Keys of Enoch?
Yes. By Hertek.
Yes. Have you read it?
I've tried.
Okay. Well, you need to go and look at key number 108.
Okay.
And
which, by the way, is a critical number.
Yes. And the book is a critical book in what you're discussing here.
Yes.
And if any of your readers,
James Hertek is definitely plugged in at many levels.
Oh yes. And this all has to do with what's occurring and with the pyramid.
Right.
And the whole lineup of everything that's happening.
All right. Thank you for your comment, and we will check it out, ma'am. Thank you. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland. Hi.
Yes, hello, Art. Hello, Mr. Hoagland. My name is Don. I'm from Las Vegas.
Yes, sir.
And, well, I have one question. I must say I love your show, and I was listening to your show the day before yesterday, and was very interested by the events about EQ Pegasi. And although I've been listening now for the last couple of hours, I haven't really gotten much information on the latest developments in the situation.
Okay, Richard, do you want to give them a synopsis?
Well, the official GeoCities site that was kind of the link to Britain, to Paul Dore the engineer, has been taken down. It's been replaced with an NSA, National Security Agency, logo, which has been up there since dawn yesterday. There is one pretty amazing piece of solid data, which is a set of observations on November 2nd by an Australian team at the Australia Telescope Compact Array, which has a stunning confirmation of a signal just about in the right place on the frequency spectrum to be matched with two other confirmations from Japan and Guernsey, England, earlier. And we're now waiting for another confirmation. The Enterprise people are putting together their own radio astronomical facilities. You know, we've got Dish and we've got LNA and we've got, you know, feed horns and all that assembled. And there is someone tonight putting this stuff together. The next couple of days, we're hoping to go online ourselves. Because if this thing is an interstellar probe, if it's somebody coming to visit, then as it gets closer and it slows down, it will get louder and louder and the frequency will fall. And we should be able to get confirmation from almost anybody in the next week or two.
That's fantastic. One other question I had was that if this was an interstellar probe, the as you said the other day, the signal is slowing down as the vehicle is approaching the...
No, the tone is falling in frequency.
The frequency is falling. Has there been any, I'm sure there's wild speculation, but is there any indication of what the signal is? Has anybody been able to decipher in any way what the signal may be?
It doesn't appear to be modulated. It appears to be a carrier. Mm-hmm. That is basically just a tone to, right, to signify the presence of something. But, in fact, the information may be transmitted on another set of frequencies, and because everyone's been focused on this narrow part of the spectrum, maybe other people have knowledge about where to look, but the amateur community doesn't, because they're taking all their cues from Paul Dore and his so-called detection.
And while all of that's going on, it should be noted that SETI, the SETI League, has said basically this is all a hoax, and it has set back SETI 100 years.
And at the same time, the Australian facility, the ATCA, all six of their 22-meter antennas are mysteriously down for maintenance.
All of a sudden. That's
yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland. Hi.
Good morning. This is Wanda in North Carolina.
Hello, Wanda.
Yes, I'm your twin, born the same day. Richard, I wanted to ask you, the implosion that happened on the 27th of August, that we found out about in September.
You mean the big gamma ray burst?
Yes.
Okay.
Was that not the very same day that the rocket blew up on launch down at Cape Canaveral?
You know, I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look at the videos.
I believe it was.
CNN.
And that payload carried the plutonium.
Oh, no, it did not carry plutonium.
Art
actually had me check that out. And we know that that was not an accurate report.
It did blow up. The spacecraft indeed
blew up. But it was not carrying plutonium.
Thank God. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art, and good evening, Richard. Good evening, Art, and 73, you and your family there. I have a couple comments and a couple questions real quick here.
All right.
One of the comments is 415, known in law enforcement code as civil disturbance.
Oh,
which
that's
is
interesting.
Yes, it is.
No, that is very interesting.
Yeah, it's very.
Because on midnight on Thursday, day after, 24 hours from now, and then change, the Clinton executive orders, which would remove all impediments to sweeping declaration of martial law, goes into effect. And if there is any trigger, any event, any untoward, we just basically issued indictments for Bin Laden, right? So if something were to happen after midnight tomorrow night,
right,
the president could sign with one stroke of the pen the executive orders putting in place the most draconian, and I mean, go to the website, they are draconian measures.
Huh, very fascinating. And that about figures with Clinton in there. Let's see here. Two questions for you here. My name's Don. I'm calling from Chandler, Arizona,
right,
listening on 770 KKOB.
Yes, sir.
Out of New Mexico. Being in Chandler, kind of curious, was there any more information on where the alleged landing site or what have you is north of Phoenix?
There is, and I'm deliberately holding it back. I'm hoping that someone will call in tonight with more specifics that we can use that to check and test against.
Okay, because I had missed part of that conversation there.
I
at
can
that time.
Report one important thing. Art, we had a team take a light aircraft and fly over the site yesterday with video cameras.
Oh.
And there is intriguing evidence of something being prepared.
I'm almost afraid to tell you this, Richard, but
yes?
I have several email communications about preparations going on in the area that you're talking about.
Okay. We also had another communication last night when I went off the air. You know, voicemail gets wonderful messages. There was a specific communication of a date when we should start looking for significant troop movements. And I'm going to hold that date back as well, because for those who don't want us to know, they won't know that we're getting real data. And for those that do know that we're onto it, they already know what they need to know, so we don't need to tell them.
Okay. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Richard C. Hoagland. Hi.
Oh, hi, Richard.
Let's see. Like, we're moving into, like, the Aquarian age, but it's not only an age that occurs once every 2,600 years.
Let me stop you there, because you just triggered a memory. Do you remember back some 30 years ago when Apollo 13 tried to leave for the moon?
Oh, yes.
And was launched at 1313?
Well, I don't remember that fact, but I remember.
No, it was. It's all part of the database. That 13 is, by the way, part of the physics and part of the mythology. The point is that the insignia, the official Apollo 13 patch, was 7 Pegasuses.
Really?
Yes. 7 Pegasi, I guess you would call them.
Pegasi.
7 is tetrahedral. Pegasus is connected via this set of numbers to the physics in the mythology. And what happened to Apollo 13?
A lot of bad stuff. But, yeah.
All right. They almost died.
Almost, yeah.
What were the spacecraft of Apollo 13 called? Aquarius, signifying the transition between ages.
Oh, yeah.
And the Odyssey. Now, was it the Odyssey harking back to the Grecian mythos, or was it the Odyssey harking back to Arthur C. Clarke and aliens tinkering with human evolution and paying us a visit?
How's that for you, caller?
Oh, yeah. We're entering a cycle that occurs not only 2,160 years, but it's a period that occurs only 13,000 years.
That's
going
right.
Back to the 10,000, going back to, what's it, 10,500 BC,
mm-hmm.
Graham Hancock saying that possibly that's the time when the pyramids and the Sphinx were built, because the Sphinx aligns with Leo, pyramids, Orion.
Well, remember, we have a whole historical and mythological and legendary context for this. It's called the Atlantean Epoch. And NASA, as I've said many times, has a shuttle named Atlantis.
It certainly does.
Why?
Richard, on that note, we are woefully out of time.
Again.
But what I want to do, though, is obviously there's a tremendous amount of interest around this, whether it's a hoax, whether it's a cover for something else, whatever it is, it's something, as I keep saying, and I'm holding on to this like a pit bull, this story, until I figure it out. In the meantime, why don't you give out your fax number for anybody who would now like to feed you information?
Absolutely. Area code 505-771-0820.
Okay. One more time.
505-771-0820.
And I think we should also issue a general call for anybody with an azimuth elevation dish and the ability to listen in the right area.
Now, we will put on the website a projection of the decreasing frequency and the geometric location in the sky where one should point your telescopes, because it's not at EQ Peg anymore, and it's not at 1453. It's exactly on the projected curve for zero arrival in Arizona in December.
December 7th.
December actually. 7th.
Uh-huh. So they can check your website, but we do want to enlist worldwide the efforts of anybody who has the capability to listen.
Well, the fact that all these professional antennas are suddenly going down and need maintenance all of a sudden, I find pretty interesting, don't you?
Yes. Yes, the world is so full of coincidence, isn't it? And
isn't
synchronicity.
It? Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, all right.
Well, coincidence also is a C word.
We haven't solved anything tonight, but at least we have updated everybody on what's going on, and it's pretty weird, Richard.
Let me leave you with one last thought.
Sure.
Watch Florida sometime on Friday.
Watch
something
Florida.
Major
Friday.
Could occur.
Florida on Friday. All right. As usual, leaving us with a mystery. Richard, good night.
Thank you, my friend.
See you next time.
Okay.
All right. There you have it, folks. Another visit with Richard. Florida on Friday, huh? Well, all right. Tomorrow night, Dr. Roger Lear, Whitley Strieber, some witnesses, and General A, and one of the most remarkable continuation of one of the most remarkable stories you've ever heard. It's all about Rocketdyne and what's going on there on a continuing basis. For now, from the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.